Welcome to another episode of Hair Biz Radio with your host Zakira and
Mikey.
And it's been a minute, and we always say that, so I feel like sometimes we're frauds when we come with the Hair Biz Radio podcast. What do you think, Mikey?
Well, I think if you're watching this on YouTube and you see our new studio, you will better understand why it took a little time for us to come back.
Okay, I can agree.
Back and bigger than ever. And now we have our own dedicated recording space.
Yes, we do. And in Mikey's defense, he's been traveling a lot off the coast and all these places.
You only live once.
That's true. And actually, he said one thing that stood out to me, because I felt like you don't always have to work so hard and not play. So what did you say? You said that you travel how many days out of the month to get your mind and work and everything, right?
So basically I'm on an 18-12 schedule. So I'm in Atlanta 18 days.
Yeah.
And I pretty much am going to work 18 days straight.
Yep.
And then I am traveling 12 days. And during that time, I do things that are a little bit more creative, okay? Things that need my dedicated attention, where I am not, like, here is a distraction all day.
Yeah.
People ask me for this, that, the other, everything's happening, right? So with me traveling, I just have to have good internet. I get a ton of stuff done, the complicated stuff.
Yeah. So what I heard was procrastination. I heard dedication, consistency. Like, so when you procrastinate, it's like you don't have time. Like, you can't, there's no way that someone will be able to get all the work that you get done in those 18 days if they're not strictly on a schedule. And we have a podcast where we talk about time management and all the different apps that you can utilize on your phone to be, you know, manageable, consistent, all those things. So I love that. And when you, I always take gems from Mikey, but when you said that, I was like, ain't this some, like,
I built this whole studio in a week.
Yeah, that's crazy. So today's podcast, we have a special guest who is actually a very great dear friend of mine, Kerry Abner, and he is the founder, creator of Manhattan Gray, which is a natural vegan hair moisturizer that are for people with gray hair. So they focus on embracing your gray hair, and I'm not going to talk too much about it because I want him to talk about it. But welcome to the show, Kerry.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a minute. We've been trying to do this for a minute.
Yeah, we have. Yes, I love it. So before we get into the meat of the podcast, what we do, I'm in the real estate agent industry as well, for those who don't know. And what we do, we have forecasts about, like, what's happening in the industry, what's going on. And so I want to talk about today, what is going on with the hair industry, Mikey? Like, where do you see it going? What is happening now? What's important for people who have hair care lines or hair brands right now?
So the industry as a whole is very slow.
Yeah.
Okay. And I think, you know, a lot of us are back to work and don't have the disposable income like we did during COVID, where we weren't traveling, right? No one traveled for a while, saved up a bunch of money.
Yeah.
And then the government flooded everyone with money. I feel like people bought a lot of expensive stuff and then the money ran out and now they're like, oh my God. So they just don't have that extra money. So they have to be a little bit more careful. So basically what you have to do if you're a brand owner is you have to really double down on what works.
Yeah.
You have to be creative. I actually just sent my business partner a message about an hour ago. Mm-hmm. And I say, slow times, like, really brings out the creativity in you, because it forces you to think outside of the box.
Yeah.
Because I came out with two really cool ideas this week. One of them I'm actually going to discuss with you guys today here on the podcast. So it really comes down to understanding that you're probably going to have to work twice as hard for half the result. But if you continue to work hard when you come out of this slow period, as long as you've worked hard during that slow time, you will exponentially grow your business, because you'll have all this extra content, marketing, you know, brand value, and it will be a great time when times are great.
Yeah. And I feel like that was something that I've adopted, because it's like in the seasons where things are slow, because it's slow across the board. I think the economy is just, we're in a space where we're kind of figuring out and seeing where everything is heading. But in the slow seasons, grinding hard and doubling down, like not taking your foot off the gas, because in those slow seasons, that's when you have the time, you have the energy, you have all the stuff that you can be doing, building systems, creating new ideas to do within the business. And then that way, when it does get bigger and it does get faster and things start moving back how they were, now you have all these systems in place and you can stop and work 18 days straight and go on vacation for 12 days out of the month. So it's like building up so that when it's slow, people go in offense. And it's like when it's slow, you got to be on defense and start building and creating. And that's just a way that you can maximize and get the results that you're looking for in business.
I'm really glad y'all started with that conversation.
Yeah.
Because, like, I've been feeling that. Yeah. But, like, you know, I think I'm kind of in this slow season of taking a step back from the brand and not being so in the weeds of it on a day-to-day. Mm-hmm. And, like, looking more so, like, okay, how can I build my systems and processes? And I'm even building, like, an investor deck to where I'm, like, really taking my time, going back over the 2 years of P&L to see, like, where can I really position this business to go next. Yep. And to grow it. But I felt a little bit of like guilt because my day to day didn't look like how it started. It was like the content and the videos and the reaching out to the influencers. It was like a lot of movement, but this feels like more like relaxed strategy, planning, thinking. And yep. I felt a little guilty about that. So I'm really glad that y'all started this conversation with
me. Yeah, that's good. And we're going to jump into it because it's a very unique brand. Like, there's a lot of people out there who have gray hair and they don't embrace their gray hair. And I actually, when you made the product, I thought about Ro. Shout out to Ro. She's one of, I call her like my bonus mom, but she has a hair full of gray hair, and she embraces it. Like, she looks amazing. She looks just popping, and she's like, she loves her gray hair. And so you came out with the brand, and I'm like, dang, people do need that, because some people want to, I have friends who have gray hair and they like, yeah, I'm dying this. Or even my mom, like, she'll dye her gray hair in the front, and it's like, embrace it, embrace your gray. So what prompted you to actually start the business? I mean, we could kind of see like you have gray hair, yeah, but what prompted you to start the business?
I mean, if I'm being completely transparent, it's probably more so inspired by insecurity than like inspiration at first.
That's good. Let's unpack that right quick.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it was just, you know, I've been graying since I was like 20 years old. So like to be a premature gray and to be young and to like, you know, the societal narrative about gray hair is like, well, who's stressing you out? Mm-hmm. And like, you know, you too young to have gray hair. So it kind of put me into like this shell almost. I started wearing hats and I think I wear hats and hoodies so much right now because of that narrative that was just, you know, and I don't think nobody did it maliciously, but it was just like the common occurrence for somebody young and impressionable to be like, oh man, like this is not a good thing, or this is not to be like, I'm not the representation of like traditional youth. You know what I mean? Yep. So to kind of come to, you know, early gray, I had the idea based off of one day I actually dyed my hair one time. My barber.
Really?
Yeah. I was just.
Did he use the Beijing, the black Beijing?
But I knew, I was like, bro, don't have me. Don't do me. You know what I'm saying?
Don't do me, bro. Yeah.
So it was right before I was about to move to New York from Atlanta. I got my last haircut. He was like, man, you want me to, you know what I'm saying? You want me to, you know, brush it up for you just to make it? And I was like, yeah, I tried. So he ran it, and I just felt so dumb. Like, as soon as I went to go look in the mirror, it looked like I, you know what I'm saying?
It didn't look like you.
It didn't look like me. Yeah. It kind of had the spray little lines. I was like, oh, no, we got to stop trying to rub. I'm like, nah. So that kind of prompted me, like, all right, we ain't doing that. We ain't dying our hair no more. So we need to find something to better take care of it. And I had no I didn't have any, like, hair care routine. Just as like one of the guys who kind of like got the 6-in-1 shampoo, the thick pomade at the crib, you know what I'm saying? The one brush that you use for everything. It was just like, I didn't have no real hair care routine. So as I started to get older, started to pay more attention to my health overall, I was like, okay, well, how can I take care of my hair better? I don't want it to look dry. Gray hair tends to be a little bit more dry, a little bit more brittle, a little bit more flaky, itchy. So I was just like, let me try to find something that. And I couldn't really find anything that resonated with me. Like, any type of hair product that I saw that wasn't straight up like, this is for gray hair, but this is to cover your gray hair.
Yeah.
It was some, like, it said, you know, some silver fox guy was on
the box. Oh, yeah.
Typically was a white dude on the box with his hair slicked back. Yeah. And it was like this older, distinguished white gentleman look. Like, yeah. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. I drink whiskey.
And yeah.
I wish I had some long, distinguished gray hair. Damn it.
It just felt like a vibe that I could recognize, but I it didn't resonate.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
So yep. I was like, well, where's the products for, like, textured gray hair? You know, where's my energy? Where's my vibe? And I couldn't find it. So that was the light bulb moment of, like, maybe I can start one.
Yeah, I love that. And so you've always been a person where you think of something and you execute on it. So for the people who are listening, because a lot of people come and they're like, hey, I want to start a hair business. Where do I start? Like, what did you do? What were, like, the first three steps you took to actually get started and, like, jump and dive in?
I want to make a comment. Like, my therapist calls that impulsive.
Yeah. That so
be like, you had an idea, you just go.
But sometimes it's a good thing, because procrastination can hold you back from a lot of things. Yeah. And I think sometimes if we think too much, it's like, if you think too much, you're going to talk yourself out of it.
Yeah.
And so it's just like, yeah, sit on it, think about it, but make a move. Either you're going to make the move or you're not. So I do like that. It is impulsive. And sometimes you got to weigh the pros and cons and what is it taking away from me or what is it going to add to me? But at the end of the day, I'm learning. You got to just go.
A famous entrepreneur, I forgot which one, so I don't want to misquote it, mm-hmm. said that entrepreneurship is you're jumping off a cliff and you're building the plane on the way down.
Yeah. Yeah.
And literally that's what it is sometimes.
Yeah.
You just got to jump. And guess what? A lot of times you're going to hit the ground,
mm-hmm.
but that's okay, because that's just a saying and you can get back up,
yep.
you know, get yourself back up and keep going.
Yeah, that's true. It's like, I always say, like, because I'm in a very, people that I deal with, it's like, we have different personalities. And so my personality is I can be safe and risky at the same time. Like, I'm like, let's just do it and we'll figure out the rest later. Like, or in some instances, I could be like, well, let's think about that. If it's like a higher price tag attached to it, I'm like, well, I don't know. But if it's like a business, I'm like, just do it. If it don't work out, then so what? Like, just do something else, you know?
My spirit's set up like that.
Yeah.
I manage when I use it.
Yeah, but it's great that you acknowledge, like, the impulsiveness, because when it comes, you can say, like, okay, is this me being impulsive? And then you could literally jot down, like, all right, if I do it, is this? It doesn't have to be, like, this drawn-out thing.
100%.
Like, you just sitting on it. But I'm glad you said that.
Yeah, I just wanted to share that joke with you.
Yeah.
Oh, that's impulsive. My therapist talks about
it. Yeah.
I just jumped in. It was like the first thing I did was I thought it was important for me to, like, find out if this is actually a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what I mean?
So yep.
The first thing I did was
it's good you said that. Yeah. Before you dive into that, sure. Let's unpack that right quick.
Absolutely.
Because a lot of times we start businesses, and Mikey even talks about this when he got into the hair business. Like, he's this white guy who doesn't really have a lot of hair. He doesn't wear hair extensions. He doesn't have hair extensions.
She hit it with the Sierra laugh.
And so, like, people could look at him and be like, what do you know about hair? But one thing he did, was double down and buckle down and learned about the industry. And so one thing that he always taught me was, it's not about you. And we talked about this in real estate. It's not about you. It's about, what do the people want? Like, what makes sense? Are the numbers there? And so it's like a cat and mouse of, what do I care about? But what is going to make the money? And so it's very important. I feel like I'm about to go around in a circle because I forgot what my point was. But y'all get what the point was.
So when you say money, and I'm real careful about when people bring up money.
Yeah.
Is a lot of times you do things for money, and it's not just because, everyone wants to make money.
Right.
But money also feeds the business.
Yeah.
Right. So without it actually making us be like, it's just making money. No, you got to have a business. And, you know, like at Private Label, we've employed, I mean, over 100 people at this point. We still employ a lot of people. So the money feeds everything. It's okay to want to make money.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not always your sole focus as why you would come up with something, right? So
You
came up with this because it's something you're experiencing, right? And a lot of people come up with these businesses because it's something they experience, and then they create the product behind it.
Yeah.
And with the hopes that it'll make money, because who wouldn't want to do something that is, you know, special to you that makes money?
Right.
It just makes sense.
Yeah. And I think the point that I was making was it's not about, always what you think about it, but it's you creating the solution to the problem that people have, which is what you were about to go into.
Yeah, I was just trying to do something that I understood. I had an emotional experience with it. Like, I know what it feels like to be insecure because people make jokes about people with gray hair.
Yeah.
I know that, like, the challenges of, you know, your hair looking a little drier, you know what I'm saying? After you come out, you know, of a haircut, and it's like, man, it ain't hitting all the way. And then you gotta, you know, go find some product that, you know, random product at that. So I kind of had like the storyline, mm-hmm. which I thought would give me the marketing angle.
Yeah.
And then I had the niche that I felt like, okay, well, I'm not talking to everybody because mm-hmm. I don't know a whole lot of, I'm not a beauty entrepreneur by like, background right. trade. I didn't go to school for this or mm-hmm. none of that. I just had an idea, so I couldn't tell you like the hair textures of 4Cs and I don't know, but I understood something that was like a storyline, and it gave me a niche, and it gave me a direction to go in. And then I was hoping that if I had this problem, which kind of getting into what I did first was I surveyed my dad's friends, because initially Manhattan Gray was going to be a men's product. It was exclusively going to be a men's product. I just knew that like gray hair typically and traditionally is on the, you know, the next generation of you know, the 40s and ups, right? So mm-hmm. 45s and ups, that age group. So I just went to my dad, told him about the idea. Made a survey monkey. Actually, I went online, so like just drop a link. So there's a website called Survey Monkey, and you can use Google Forms or whatever the case may be, same thing. But I just made a 5-question survey that was like, what are your biggest challenges with gray hair? What products do you use on your gray hair? If you could have one change about what you currently use, or the, you know, the texture of your gray hair, what would it be? Just those type of things.
Yeah.
And I sent it out to maybe about 25 of my dad's friends, and then it kind of grew to like just the bigger community of like friends of friends and homeboys with dads and stuff like that. So the overwhelming responses that I was getting was that my gray is dry, it's itchy, and it tends to break off a lot easier. Mm. And then they gave me a list of products that they were using for their gray hair, whether if it was a woman's product or a men's product. That gave me my like competitive landscape. Yeah. It was like, okay, well, these are the people that my customer is currently using. So then I went to those people and like kind of did some little background research about like what they're offering, how they're offering it, what's their marketing, all that kind of stuff as well.
That's good. Like a lot of, and that goes back to the impulsiveness. Like a lot of people aren't stopping to survey the people to see what are they wanting, because people will tell you what to sell if you ask. And it's great that you actually took that step, because that kind of, imagine if you didn't do that and there wasn't a market for it. And then you just spent thousands of dollars getting products and all of that, investing in it. And then you put it out and people don't really need it. So I think that's a great first step, seeing what your niche is, and then surveying people to see exactly what type of products do they need.
It also gives you your keywords. I didn't know if you was going to jump in, Mike, but I didn't want to cut you off. But it also gave me my keywords. It was like, well, if these are the buzzwords that mm-hmm. people are giving me back in my survey, I these words need to be in my marketing verbiage. And, you know, if you're familiar with like SEO and stuff like that, I need to be typing those in on my back end metadata, so that when people go to Amazon and type in dryness, like my product, you know, has more of an opportunity to float to the top for visibility.
Yeah. Trust me, Sakira knows SEO, guys. But
Mikey is the SEO king.
But I was on her like this for 10 years about SEO. Not 10 years. So yeah, Zakira, you're not going to say anything today about online, this, that, the other. Zakira does not know, because Zakira knows. She knows some things.
But if you want to expound on how SEO, and you built private label through SEO.
Yeah, a lot of private label was built through SEO, and a lot of the things we've done with that. And it's interesting that you say, because this just goes into, we might be jumping ahead a little bit, but you talk about the survey that you did. And one of the questions is, once you came out with the product, you probably reached out to those people that surveyed on SurveyMonkey, because you probably capturing some sort of data, whether probably back then or recently, their phone number or email. How many of those people do you know actually made the purchase? Because this is a common narrative that we talk about, support from your friends and family, and how there's such a lack of it. So I'm just curious what your experience was as far as getting support from, this is more of like your dad's friends, I get it, but just what kind of support did you get once you launched the product from that core group of people?
I probably surveyed maybe a total of 50 people altogether. Mm-hmm. So I would probably say I had a good 50% rate of people who actually came through and purchased, because they were my first, that was my first email list. So I did capture it. Like one of the last questions was like, if I pursue this, you know, can I reach back out to you once I have the actual product? And if yes, put your email. So I added those people to my my email list. And at the time it was MailChimp. And then I sent them that I had the product and they could pre-order it. And I want to say I had a good about 50% people hit me back.
That is strong.
Yeah, that is strong. Because maybe, yeah.
You know what it could be with them, with this, that's a little different. And I think we can all learn from this is, he made this core group of people part of the process and yep. story in the yeah. beginning. And I think a lot of us don't do that. We just kind of like, oh, I have my new website.
Yeah, that's right? true.
But people maybe felt a little bit more attached. And I think that's maybe how Kickstarter and some of these other things work pretty well, because they find out a little bit more about the story, the why. You can get in early. You can be the first one, the founder of this thing, mm-hmm. you know? So, but that's very interesting, because a lot of times we hear people complain that they get zero support. And I'm like, don't build a business because you think your friends and family are going to buy. They're not going to buy until you're quote unquote famous or doing really well. So to get that kind of support is awesome. Either that or you're just in a really good circle. So I'm glad I met you today.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they gave me that first time purchase just off my execution. You know, the return customer rate probably dropped off. But just off the first, like, hey, man, we saw you execute and we're going to support that. I think, you know, they just stood up on that.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think going into that, how long did it take you to make your first sale when you started?
My first sale? It was the first day. Like when I jumped the website off and made my full social media post, I wanted to say it was the first day.
Okay.
Yeah, but when did you start? What year did you launch this?
I launched this on my birthday in July 2020. So July 31st is my birthday.
Okay.
So 3 years. Mm-hmm. So people talk about in the hair industry, it's a little different because there are a lot of different hair brands. And so people get into the hair industry and they get upset because they're not making sales like the first day or the first week or the first month. But I think people can also say that they didn't do what you did in the beginning. Like they didn't do the background work to figure out who is my audience, like where are they at, all of the different things. And so they go and just put something out. It's like you had a build up, you had a launch strategy. Mm-hmm. And I think where people miss is that, okay, cool, I want to start this hair business. I'm going to get my website. I'm going to get my branding. I'm going to post some posts on Instagram. And then I'm going to expect the people to come purchase from me. And that's not how it works, because there's so many different hair brands. Why purchase from you when homegirl down the street has hair that is, it might be a little bit more expensive, but her packaging, her branding, her niche, her story, it's all different. It's better. It's more approachable. And so it's like you have to do the work before getting into and starting your brand to build people up to actually want to shop with you. So that was really great.
Yeah, I just wanted an audience to launch to. I think that was kind of coming from, you know, my background as a marketer as well. As like, well, let's already have an audience to like present the product to versus just yelling it.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, and that's good, because I think a lot of times people are like, okay, I'm going to launch this thing and I'm going to get my social media post right, and you launch it and it's like, where are the sales at? And it's like, you made a post. People don't know what you're doing. They weren't a part of it. They didn't feel like, oh, dang, I can relate to that. Yeah. And so that's really good.
Yeah.
It's interesting because your story is just, it is, because maybe it's just not exactly hair. Mm-hmm. It is very different than a lot of people that we've had on the podcast as far as kind of getting it going. So 3 years, what kind of success have you seen? What are some of the challenges? And then what are some of the different success where you feel like it's, because everyone has different versions of success, right? Mm-hmm. So what are some of the positive things and negative things that you've had since getting started?
Yeah, some of the positive things is that, you know, I think I've actually validated a product market fit. You know, I think that people with gray hair didn't originally have something that was specifically saying maintain, embrace, choose your greatness. That's like one of our like fun taglines we play with. But it's like nobody was really saying that embrace your gray. All the products was about covering. So I think one of the wins, one of the early wins I had is that I have a direct niche audience to talk to, people with gray hair. That's a very specific type, right? And then very specific set of challenges. But one of the other things I felt like was working in my favor is that I don't look at Manhattan Gray so much as a hair company. I kind of look at it as a time company, because I feel like everybody's going to go gray at some point. So I just have a conveyor belt of generations. Gray or gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah, it's either gray or gone. So in my mind, I'm like, if I can just maintain the brand integrity and build brand trust that, like, I'm delivering what I say I'm delivering, the product does what it says it's going to do, then ultimately I can just have a generational conveyor belt of customers. So I thought that worked in my favor as well. Return customer rate is decent. I'm still kind of building up, so I'm still figuring that out. Having a product that has its own custom formula, working with a manufacturer was really fun for me, but I went the private label. I never cooked up Manhattan Gray in my kitchen. I don't have pots and pans in Manhattan Gray. I always was like, okay, I understood enough to be like, there's a private label company out here that either already has a formula or could help me create a formula based off the challenges that I'm trying to address for gray hair. And because it was something unique that they hadn't dealt with before, they was willing to create me a custom formula. So I have something that works in that space. Growing it from an e-commerce, I don't have a lot of overhead. I do have overhead as far as like lids, jars, seals, the formula, all the unit pieces. But because I'm doing this on an e-commerce space, like getting a fulfillment partner to actually send off the products once it's been purchased, that I have a little small world of ecosystem that makes this business run, to where I'm like the focal point of the marketing, but somebody over here, which is my fulfillment center, they ship and pack and send it off to my customers, and then somebody over here actually creates the formula, puts it in the jar, puts the labels on it, and then sends it to so I'm kind of like in this three-man weave of small business. Some of the negatives have been, or I wouldn't even call them negatives, just like challenges, and I think everybody goes to these pain points, is, you know, learning how to scale a business that you kind of are new to, you know what I mean? And kind of trying to figure out how to scale a business. I think I have my product in glass jars, and I was trying to fight between, like, should I do glass because it feels more luxury?
Heavy to ship.
Yeah, right? And then it's like they break and like a whole thing, or should I put them in plastic? But it kind of like, then it's a plastic cup, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
A plastic jar. So then
perceived value changes.
Yeah, definitely. So I struggled with that for a little bit, went back and forth on that. Really just building I think I'm a solopreneur too. So like I'm a solopreneur on the back of a job. I have a job, and then I work this as a solopreneur. So I think it's just hard to be the social media person, the accountant, the customer service person, and the web design. So it's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot. And sometimes I get so burnt out off of it. Sometimes I just got to stand back so I can kind of like get myself out of it for a second and come back with fresh eyes. So I hope that kind of gave.
Let me ask you something. You just mentioned a bunch of tasks that you have to do as a solopreneur. And I think a lot of us have to do that as a solopreneur. Do you have all those items written down somewhat in a daily, weekly, and monthly calendar of the expectations that you're setting for yourself as a solopreneur?
I'm starting to. I think that's like my season right now, where I'm like actually writing down, documenting, and even screen recording some of the tasks that I do so that like, I started working with VAs, and I, you know, kind of tested the idea of like, okay, if I needed to offload some of the things that I do repetitively, could I get somebody else to do it? So in that season, or in the season I'm in right now, I've kind of been slowing down. Step one, this is the website I go to. This is the login information. This is the button I press. And then I screen record myself actually doing it, and then put it in a document that I share with different VAs so that like, this, can you do this for me?
Because we just talked about this 2 days ago.
Yeah. Because I'm doing a lot of that now, to not just of stuff inside the company, but for exponential growth. But when I tell you, when you're dealing with VAs, you have to go all in on training.
Yeah.
I'm talking double, triple check, one stage at a time, because it's easy for us a lot of times because we've been doing e-commerce or a lot of this stuff for a while. But then, you know, you get this VA that says they know how to do everything, which you don't really know whether or not they do. So you really have to go in on the training. But once it's done, oh, it makes a world of difference.
And that's what my mind said. It was like, it takes a little bit. It takes me, you know, good 2-4 hours to sit down and actually write down the process and mm-hmm. screen record it and bookmark it and upload it to YouTube and kind of get the thing together. And then to pass it off to somebody and say, hey, is this feasible for you to follow? Like, am I clear with step one, step two? Are you able to do it? And then go in with the training of, you know, making sure that if they have any questions, concerns, and or if I didn't do something properly, I just go back and fix it. But once it's done, it's done. And I don't have to worry about that particular thing as far as my plate anymore. And that's where I'm going for. So the longevity of it.
Yeah. You mentioned the manufacture part of it. And so where a lot of people get tripped up at, even in the hair industry, is how do I find a great supplier? So did you have a hard time finding a manufacturer, and what was that process like?
I think I was so unemotional about it that like I just went to Google and typed in private label companies and poked around like 50 different websites and had just made a Google Excel sheet of just, these are the 50 private label companies that I found, right? And then I'd eliminate them based off like what my minimum was. So if I needed to order a 10,000 unit minimum, mm-hmm. I knew that this was too big for me. I wasn't at that stage yet.
Got it.
So I would just, then that eliminated 10 of them, right?
Okay, yeah.
And then it was like, okay, well, you know, get on the phone with somebody. And if they, when you're talking about black hair care specifically or textured gray hair specifically, you kind of lose a lot of people who understand that space. So when I get on the phone, I'm like, hey, this is the problem. I'm a black man, blah, 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 blah. And I'm giving them the rundown. And just based off of their interaction with me, I kind of can tell if this is like something that they are willing to walk me through. And because I needed a little hand holding.
Yeah.
I was coming in from zero.
Yeah.
So I knew nothing. Right. So I needed a little bit of hand. I needed somebody who was willing to invest in me beyond the actual product.
Yeah.
And that was a lot of, you know, a lot of cold calls, a lot of cold conversations. People didn't really want to talk to me. So that eliminated another 10. Mm-hmm. So I basically got down to like 5 different people eventually. And then it was just, you know, who's willing to kind of take this extra investment with me by educating me along the way, mm-hmm. telling me why these products work, providing samples for me, giving me a low minimum order count so I can test things and try things out and even pass some free products around for different people. And then like their branding and their marketing, like, you know, having people of color on your website meant a lot to me because it gave me the impression that you are at least accepting to the conversation and or there's people in the organization that we're talking the same language.
Yeah.
So that was a big thing. And then I eventually came down to one and then it was a wrap. So that was a little bit of a probably like 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's 2 weeks is great.
Yeah,
that's,
I was on it. And, and it was COVID. So
like, okay. Yeah. You had nothing but time. Mikey, when you started Private Label, how can you relate to the process? Because I know a lot of times the sale is that, you know, use us because we did the hard work for you. Like, you don't have to go on Alibaba and go look at 50 different manufacturers to see what product is actually right.
Yeah, it was different because I also had a lot of experience working overseas because my first business, we were manufacturing food products out of Thailand and then importing it into the U.S. and selling grocery stores. So that was a great experience. So I was very open to working with suppliers. The problem in the hair industry and working with suppliers is you'll order these small orders and it still happens today. Then you order a big bulk order and you're going to get
it's really different. Crappy hair. Yeah.
One of the reasons why a lot of people work with private label and have for, I mean, some people almost were coming in our 10th, we're in our 10th year, literally from the beginning, they still work with us because they know the consistency of our sourcing. To give you an example, I'm headed back to China and will be every 6 months now that China is back open. And I was talking to he's like my brother, one of the top manufacturers in China for hair. And we talk all the time. And I said, you know, it's amazing how some of these products on Amazon are so inexpensive, right? For hair products.
Yeah.
But what a lot of people don't realize is the manufacturing of lace is still not what it was pre-COVID because there were so many changes that happened. And he even explained to me how there's a lot of those products they have. And they basically sell it to people to sell on Amazon because it's all the garbage that he would never sell me.
Oh, wow.
They don't, like, we're their top client, right? So they're not going to play with the products with us. And they really stand by them, which is rare to have that relationship with right. somebody.
He spoke about like relationship building.
Yeah, and how the relationship is so important. So, you know, but me going over there, shaking hands, hot tea. I always say hot tea in the summer, 100 degrees. Oh, yeah, the hot tea sounds great.
I'm eating like, bugs.
Does anybody have an unsweet iced tea with a lot of ice around here? No. But it is what it is. So it's just one of those things where you just have to jump in. I mean, there's certain people that we've worked with where we had to cut ties with because they didn't do their part of the relationship. So to get into the manufacturing of products, which we do a little bit of as well, working with suppliers, it is tough and it is hard, especially for Black African-American hair care products. Because obviously I research that stuff all the time.
Yeah.
To be able to find somebody that's going to work because not everybody understands, right? And it's just tough.
Yeah.
So
So going into the business, you got started with the business. You put it on Shopify.
Yep.
Why did you go with Shopify?
It was just I think Shopify is the superior platform for e-commerce. It's user-friendly. The UI is very adaptable. It has the analytics that I thought I needed to, you know, to understand and grow the business by numbers. You know, it comes with templates and it's easy to play with.
Yeah. And so that's what Private Label pushes to the clients is Shopify and WordPress, but mainly Shopify because of the user friendliness and all of that. And when you got started, correct me if I'm wrong, did you get a grant from Shopify or what was the, how did you?
When I first started, I didn't have a grant. I just happened to, it was around when the SBA was giving out some money.
Oh, okay.
So I think I applied off the strength of like, hey, I got this, I got an LLC, I got a business bank. I did all like the nuts and bolts up front. And then they gave me a couple thousand to kind of get it kicked off. And then as I was running the business on Shopify, maybe like a couple months into it, maybe six to 8 months into it, Shopify offers like a loan.
Got basically. It. Okay. Yeah.
So Shopify Capital.
Yeah, Shopify Capital. Yes, that's exactly what it's called. So Shopify Capital, they give you a couple thousand and then you pay them back based off your daily sales or off of the percentage of a daily sales.
And that's really great because a lot of times people don't have capital going into business and so they need it. So if you can create your business, start your platform, be consistent with your sales, Shopify can then say, okay, let me front you money to get more product. And then as you continue to sell, that's when you pay it back. So I think that's a good, something good that you tapped into that you were able to just use because not everybody has money just laying around to start a business.
Yeah, it's definitely cost intensive. Like what I figured out about this particular business, there's so many like intricate, like small pieces that you pay for. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like you got to pay attention to everything. Like the shipping and the handling and the price of the lids and the jars and the packing and the shipping. Like I ain't know shipping and packing was two different things.
But yeah.
Like, it costs money to take it off the shelf.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wrap it up, put it in a box, the tape, the shipping label.
Yeah. Yes. As my Grammy would say, it costs to be the boss as she drinks her margarita. And I just crack up laughing all the time.
I do. So I learned so much like how to itemize my chart of accounts. So I run my accounting through QuickBooks and like to really break that down so specific it's hard actually to do.
And you have two SKUs?
Yeah, just two.
Two SKUs. Okay. And then you sell on Shopify, your main website.
Yeah.
And then you also sell the products on Amazon and
I was just about to get into that. Yep.
Right. And do you have that connected in the back end through Shopify or are you using like Amazon FBA where you're sending Amazon the product and they're packing, shipping it for you?
It's connected to the fulfillment center. So Shopify, Amazon and Walmart.com all connect or have like integrations with this platform called Shipmunk. And it's like a 3PL e-commerce fulfillment center. And they take my orders from all of my platforms and ship it off just normal.
That's a really great, what am I trying to say the word? Sometimes I get like brain farts and my words be all over the place.
my God, guys, somebody get her a coffee.
That's a great here. That's a great tool. We're going to actually put that in the show notes so that people have access to it. Ship sure. Monkey.
Yep, Shipmunk.
Shipmunk. Yeah, okay.
It's been around for a while.
Shipmunk. Okay, cool.
Yeah, and then have you thought about going the FBA route where you're sending Amazon maybe a case or a couple cases of products and then have them have it under Prime and have them actually ship it?
Yeah, I just got accepted into the Black Business Accelerator with Amazon.
Let's go. Yeah.
That is not easy to get, like, the documentation, because we, some of our partners, you know, we help on the back end with stuff.
Yeah.
That's a lot of documentation, like, to get into that. Amazon's really like, you need to do this.
No, yeah. So my question was going to be, I know you got on Amazon. Mm-hmm. What was the process of that? Because actually a lot of people ask, how do I put my stuff on Amazon?
Oh, it's intense. Yeah. I ain't going to lie. So you need to go to this, you need to get this thing called a GTIN number, mm-hmm. like Global Tracking Identification Number, I think it stands for. And then that's like also in the realm of like your UPC, your, you know, your code, yeah. your barcode. So each individual SKU needs to have a GTIN number. So then that's like the first thing. If you ain't got that, it's dead in the water.
Yeah.
And then you need that. You need to have some sort of, I don't know if you needed a process of trademarking, but I think Walmart, they asked me for like my trademark papers. So
you have to be at least in process yeah. because what they're trying to do is separate you from the other brands. So people can't sell XYZ product on your product page.
Right.
So if you own the trademark to it, it gives you a lot more power because you can sell it without it.
Right.
But it's not pretty, guys.
Yeah.
It was a thing. So I was already in the process because I thought there I wanted go. To do that. So GTIN numbers, some sort of like trademark process document that you like are in movement of that. And then, you know, like your SKU numbers, your product descriptions, your the photos of it, very clean on white backgrounds. Like they have pretty mm-hmm. stringent acceptance on that. But yeah, it's just a step-by-step-by-step thing. It feels tedious, but if you just check off.
It works if you work it.
Yeah. This is the way I like to think about it is there's millions of people that sell on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
If they figure it out, you better believe I'll figure it out.
Yeah, that's true.
One way or another.
Yeah.
It might be hard, but we know if all these other people did it, I can do it too.
Yeah.
As long as you have that mentality, you'll get it done.
Yeah. 100%. That website where you can get your GTIN number is, and that's probably like one of the biggest pieces is GS1. GS1.us or something like that. But like, I know it's GS1 for sure. And you can get those numbers from there.
Okay. That's so it. You sell on, so you have your website, Amazon, Walmart, mm-hmm. where else do you sell?
That's it right now.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Do you have any thoughts of where you want to be? Like if you had it your way, where in the next 3 years do you see the product being?
I mean, I'd like it to go to like Nordstrom, and I'd like it to go to.
He skipped past Target, okay? I mean, he's like Nordstrom. Let him put like me Target. In the top dog.
Of course, I like Target. Of course, I like Target. I mean, you know, but you know, I think when I went into this,
mm-hmm.
When I started this brand, I had what they call a avatar. Mm-hmm. So it was like, who would be your person if Manhattan Grey was a physical person, and that person was Idris Elba.
So okay,
it was like Idris Elba to me, and I ain't, you know what I mean, but he was just
a good looking, polished, clean guy
with
gray hair.
You yep. know what I'm saying? Like his beard clean. He just embodied what I thought the product was if it was standing in front of me as like a physical person.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I built it out, it was very much so supposed to be, and what I still kind of upheld that was like a luxury hair care product for, you know, the more dapper person with gray hair who cares about their maintenance.
Yeah. You know
what I'm saying? They're going to get their nails clipped. Mm-hmm. They're going to get a fresh pea coat because I made it when I was in New York.
Okay.
So yeah. That's where the name Manhattan Gray came from.
Yeah.
It was actually like I was standing at the bus stop in New Jersey looking at the New York skyline, the Manhattan skyline, and it was raining. And New York always seemed to have like this gray tone to me. It's like like Gotham City. You mm-hmm. know? All the buildings is, you know, everything is cement basically.
Yeah.
So I was like, I don't know how it happened, but it just struck me like, oh, Manhattan Gray, that's gonna be the name. Bomb. So then when I went,
and it's dope. Yeah.
It's kind of built off of like me thinking of like the chic 40 plus person who, you know, got the leather briefcase, the pea coat, yep. you know what I'm saying?
I see it.
Yeah.
I like see it.
Their little toiletry bag is leather. They open it. It's got the Manhattan Grays in there.
Yeah.
That's how I felt like. That's how I wanted it to look. So when I say Nordstrom, it's kind of still pulling off that idea like, oh, we can we can get fly, you know what I'm saying, and be a hair care product too.
I like that.
I think that's why I chose the glass jars too. You absolutely right that it costs more to be a part of that, you know, to be a
to
part
ship
of
it. Yeah, pack
like,
it. Yeah.
Do. But I don't know, it feel good. You know what I mean? Like when I pick it up, I'm like, ooh, you know what I'm saying? Like it feel like it got a little weight to it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So that's kind of like the swag part I try to drop in there.
So what when you started building the business, I know you got into influencer marketing.
Yeah.
Hold on, real quick.
Okay,
before we get into that, I just kind of want to go over something. So I said I have kind of a surprise for you. And I think that I've, you know, like I said, I was listening to Future this week. Yeah. I had taken a break from Future. I had a lot of Drake and other stuff in the last few weeks. But I was like, let me get into some Future. Let me get fired up.
Yeah.
And he was talking about some commas. And I said, you know what? I like commas. But also with Private Label has always been a brand that we enjoy working with other entrepreneurs and other people, right? And I think that is so special and what has helped build the brand. I mean, we've started more hair brands than any other, and since 2016, there's no other hair company starting more hair brands than us. There's just no way. Yeah. I mean, we're a partner with Shopify. You try to sign up for Shopify, and if you don't make their stringent, like for payments, they're like, you have to use this company, us, or your vendor. I mean, we're in good with them. So I always think of more ways. So I had another idea this week when we were at a Paul Mitchell event. And then I was thinking about it today because Zakir sent me a screenshot of your product, which I thought, and then I was on Instagram kind of going through and looking at everything. This is really cool. And then I came up with this idea. So Private Label, we're not Nordstrom's. We're not huge with thousands of stores, but we do have 6 stores, 4 strategically placed in Atlanta.
That's so crazy because I know what you're about to say, and I thought about it this morning. I literally thought about it this morning. I swear.
So we have 4 in Atlanta, 1 in Charlotte, 1 Detroit, right? And what I thought about is how I can work with more entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of people that have non-competing products to Private Label, meaning like I'm not trying to work with someone that sells hair extensions. That makes no sense. But I was thinking of creating in the showroom a small business corner, right? And it's the shelf space, create new shelf space for local or just US entrepreneurs in the USA that have their own product and they pretty much only sell online. But you know, selling online is cool. But man, wouldn't it be nice if you had a place you could send someone to go get your product in person?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. So this is something I don't have all the details for you yet, but I would like to invite you into this program. Private Label, when I initially started it, I didn't want any other products other than our brand. That was the initial thing. I said, nope. I said, I can make anything. You know, I mean, I have absolutely no fear about making products, and we have a large enough market where I can get feedback and make changes and everything else because 100% the products, I will not be offended if someone says your product sucks to me, but I will fix it, right? But then I said, if I just need to slow down with that and work together with more people, how can I do so? And I think bringing in a couple shelves of products and working with other entrepreneurs, because like, for example, I don't want to bring it up here, but someone very well known on a TV show, about 4 million followers on Instagram, I called and asked her and she was like, oh my God, I love it. I would love to do that. I would love to come into your store and do a pop-up and other things. Then I started thinking, well, our Tucker store, you saw the one here in Atlanta, a little bit smaller. Our Tucker store is huge.
Yeah.
It has plenty of space. And I said, man, if we did a pop-up where we got maybe 5, 6, 7, 8 people together of the small business corner that we have and put them all together for a big pop-up day, and everyone uses their influence and audience to get together, we could create something really special. And I don't think enough brands work together in this capacity. So we're going to start.
I love it.
That's Is that what you thought of, Zakir?
Not that to an extent, but I was like, dang, Manhattan Grey. I was literally, when I sent you the screenshot, I was like, this would actually be dope at the stores.
Right.
And I had thought about it, but I didn't say it because I was like, I got to talk through it and like talk to you.
There's a lot of women actually come in here, right? I mean, it's almost 100% your demographic, but it's all women. And so many women come in here. Like, do you have anything for guys?
Yeah.
A lot of times guys are the ones giving, you know, funding some of this stuff.
Right.
They just come in. They just want to get something because they're buying something for themselves. Who doesn't want to buy something for their significant other?
Yeah.
Right.
And it works for women too. I've used it on my hair. I actually bought it. My husband used it for his beard. Mm-hmm. Even though he doesn't have gray hair, it's still a great moisturizer. Uh-huh. And then also Private Label has the gray extensions still, yeah. right? The Vietnamese gray extensions that the product is light. I remember when you started it, it was like some of the feedback you got was maybe it was a little heavy.
Yeah, that's why I started the oil. So I have a, yeah. I had, it was a flagship product of the pomade. And then it was like, so some of the feedback was like, you know, it's a little heavy for my hair. So I created mm-hmm. the oil as an alternative for finer hair textures.
Yep. And so that works too with extensions. You could use it for your extensions mm-hmm. to give it that shine. The gray extensions, like it looks very, very natural. But it's like if you have that product and you're putting it on your gray extensions, you kind of have some shine body life. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was even thinking, the problem with our shipping, it's we don't charge a lot for shipping, and something like this is heavy. Mm-hmm. But what would be really cool is because we offer local delivery in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. So it could, I just had to figure this part out. Getting on the shelves, that's pretty easy. I just buy some retail shelves and put the product on, right?
Right.
We can figure that out. But also to have the local delivery would be really cool because oh, yeah. like you can go into the store. Guess what? You can buy it at Amazon, Walmart. But if you need it today, because you're going out of town, you can actually Private Label delivers faster than Amazon.
Yeah, I get a lot of that actually. And I have mm-hmm. a pretty decent customer base in Atlanta just from demographic, yeah. The data shows me. So that's amazing.
Because a lot of people want to go into a store. I mean, as much as COVID got us to buying online, trust me, people are back out into store shopping.
Yeah.
So it gives, I just think it's great because I'm like, I have the space. Why don't we maximize it?
Yeah.
You know, I was talking to some of the managers about it. I said, you go into a beauty supply store, it's packed now. Mm-hmm. Private Label is not going to be a beauty supply store because that's a different experience.
Right.
We're more the Gucci experience.
Yeah.
So it just kind of makes sense. So we'll talk after the podcast.
Yeah.
That'd be something kind of fun.
That's super love. Dope. I so love much. That, Mikey.
I'm super grateful. Thank you, man. That's exciting.
That was a great surprise.
Yeah, that is actually. Yeah,
you didn't know.
Yeah, no, I didn't. Man. That was actually a really great
I'm
surprise.
I'm excited about that. Appreciate you, man.
Yeah. So wrapping up here, what I know you've built businesses before Manhattan Great.
Tried.
Yeah, but I mean, you're not new to coming up with an idea and executing on something.
Right.
So what is one piece of advice that you would give to someone who is struggling with the ideation stage or even creating the idea and actually getting started with it, a business?
Creating the idea is typically the fun part. Mm-hmm. I think it's the execution part that comes into play. I didn't know that I would be doing all, I didn't know product development. I didn't know, packaging and labeling. I didn't know customer service for real at this level. Like, you know, you got to fix stuff. Mm-hmm. You
know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Like send backs and mm-hmm. chargebacks and this don't work. And work. Like, it's a thing. So like, I don't think that the idea so much should be romanticized as much as like trying to get in your mind as far as you can, like all the things that you possibly would need to do to get to the finish line.
Yeah.
And that's the part why I'm a little more like, man, let's just jump.
Yeah.
Because
the impulsiveness.
But I trust myself enough to know that whatever's in front of me, I do have that piece of me that's like, but we gonna figure this part out. Mm-hmm. So like, if you don't have that part, then it's probably like try to map it out for yourself. Like,
yeah.
Okay, I'm going to need to get this and I'm going to need to get a formula and it has to get into a jar and it has to have a label on it. And do I want to have a seal on it to give it that little extra security phase? How is it going to get to the customer? If they have a problem with it, how's it going to get back to me? Just think about it in its entirety. I don't think I did all that. I just kind of was like, this idea going to be fire and whatever we got to do to get to the rest of it,
yeah.
We'll do that part later. But I have that part in me to where it's like, oh, we just going to knock those pins down.
That's really good. That's actually really good because I think some people get into it and they don't think, it's almost like going back to a business plan. Like some people nowadays, they don't create business plans because it's so back in the day, you have to have a business plan to get started. But I think it's important because when you have the business plan, you're building out what the business looks like now, what you project it to be, but then also finding out the core steps and places that you need to be and things that you need to do to actually get the business off the ground and started. So I think that's really great.
I have a lot of community too. Like, you know, I think we talked about influencers. I just was hitting people up and people was just like really receptive to the idea. So mm-hmm. I don't want to sit up here and be like, I just, you know, pushed, I forcefully pushed this through. It was a lot of people that banded together to, like, whether they made content, posted on their social, mm-hmm. that helped it grow. So
was it a dedicated influencer program that you actually set aside and said, okay, I have a budget for influencers here, or I have this amount of product I want to give out? Because I know you have a heavy background in influencer marketing, and this was something that we did, and Mikey actually started I remember sharing this with you a while ago. It's a platform called Beauty Cloud. And it basically connects the influencers with the brands, and it creates the contracts for you. It has the escrow where the money is being held until the product is, or until the post or whatever it is actually being completed, and then the money is released. So it's like a whole process. So when you were finding influencers, what did you use? Like, what were the tools that you used?
Man, I wish I knew about Beauty Cloud.
I told you about it years ago.
I wish I had the foresight to be like, you know what I mean? I don't think I had it that far. I don't even think I had the product that far to really activate on it. Mm-hmm. I just did it the old school way. I ain't going to hold you.
Yep.
I got on Instagram. Once I found one person with gray hair, I clicked their followers. I went through every person mm-hmm. who had gray hair and sent them a DM and was like, hey, I got this product. I'd love for you to try it. You know, this is what the problem I'm trying to solve. And at first, it was like, you don't even got to post about it. I just want you to have it just to see if I'm like tripping. Like, mm-hmm. Does this work?
Yep.
And that was the first thing. And I probably just did it to a point to where I was like, all right, I don't send too much product out. Okay. I don't even know if I like actually looked at the numbers.
Yeah.
I was like, it ain't doing no good sitting in my apartment. So whatever it is, it need to get up out of here.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
That's really good.
So I kind of just took the L up front on some, you know, some upfront investment costs. Of like people wanting to try it. But then once it kind of grew to a point to where I could pay people, I just hit them up and was like, yo, are you accepting any paid collaborations right now? And if they said yeah, I'd send them an email or ask them for their email, send them an email with some links of some ideas of what I'm trying to do, and then let them quote me a price. If I can afford it, I'll pay them. I draft up a little template agreement, put it up on HelloSign. All the little pieces that y'all got in that one platform, I probably got to do manually.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but one of the things that I heard you say was confidence. And so I think a lot of times people don't do those type of things because they're scared of rejection, or they have a fear of just going after what it is that they want based off of the reaction that they'll get from somebody else. So the fact that you went into someone's DMs, said, hey, I have this product, it's new, they probably never heard of it. It's like you had the confidence to be like, I mean, the worst that can happen is they leave you on read. Like, that's the worst that can happen. Or they say, I'm not interested. So it's like I'm giving people some hope that I know you may be afraid to get in front of a camera, on a microphone, slide in somebody's DM, but it's like you have to do it in order to grow.
Yeah, I'm pretty unemotional about things until I'm emotional.
Yeah.
Until I'm emotional, then it's like, oh, you know.
Yeah.
But if I ain't really tripping, I don't really care if you tell me no, because I'm not attached to it.
That's actually really good, because some people are attached to the no.
Yeah, I think the two things that hold entrepreneurs back the most are fear.
Mm-hmm.
Fear is first, and then it's education.
Yep.
Right? Because you're telling us the process of what you went through to launch your product. But when you first started, probably half of those, you didn't even know it was something that you were going to have to deal with.
Right.
Right. So it's getting over the fear of, oh my gosh, should I start this product? Should I start a business? I have to reach out to manufacturers. I've never done that before. I don't know what I'm doing. Once you got over that fear, then you get the process started. And then it's the knowledge and education of how to put everything in place. Many of those things you don't know yet, mm-hmm. but you're going to find out once you get started.
Yeah, that's true. The last question I have for you is, I know that you are also working a 9-to-5 and you're doing your business, and you kind of talked us through what this season looks like for you and getting stuff structured. But what is one tip or tool that you can share with someone who is also working a 9-to-5 that thinks that they can't start a business on the side in the hair industry?
You got weekends.
Mm-hmm.
Like you, that's you got 2 days. To dedicate as much time as you would like to your business. And don't try to, I also would, you know, encourage people with like real, you know, 9-to-5s and you work all day. And if you got a family, that's another, you know, large portion of your attention and energy. But I mean, if you can, you know, dedicate an hour, or like, don't try to swing for the fence every time you feel like you want to try to work. I get real anxious and feel, funny about when I'm not actively doing something. I had to train my mind to be like, yo, man, like, put in 2 hours or an hour to just either read, send this email, reach out. Maybe I spent 1 hour reaching out to influencers. Mm-hmm. Maybe I spent 1 hour writing up the descriptions for my products. 1 hour to like make the social media post that's going to go live next week or scheduling the emails.
Yeah.
You can't do everything while you have that, you know, while you have living your livelihood,
yeah,
you know, your job. But then those weekends and trade in some of them nights of, yeah, like hanging out and, mm-hmm, be like, yo, I'm gonna put 4 hours in on a Saturday morning because what else am I doing?
Yeah, that's
know,
true.
After you clean up, go to the gym, get you go grocery shopping, you know what I'm saying? Put knock out from a little 10 to 2 of just like, boom, yeah, we'll get cracking today. Mm-hmm. And then do it on Sunday too, and then go back to work on Monday. And,
yeah.
You know, so I would just say, like, carve out your time, but it doesn't have to be this extraneous sprint of, like, tiring and burnout.
Yeah, that's actually a really great point, I think.
Yeah, because people sprint all the time in business.
Yeah.
They get burned out quick.
Yeah. If
they signed up for the wrong race.
Yeah.
Because when you're running a business, it's not a sprint. You signed up for a marathon. And it's a long run.
Yeah.
It's one of those, it's not that 26, what is it, 26.2? I've run a few myself. It actually have helped me with business and understanding that. This is like the ultra marathon, 100 miler.
Yeah.
This is just, but even further, this is nonstop with business.
So yeah. This has been great. A great conversation, great podcast. I'm super excited for where Manhattan Gray is going. Thank you, Mikey, for just everything.
It might even be going to private label. We'll see, guys. That's exciting. That's why we do this.
Yeah. But tell everybody where they can find you online and offline.
Yeah, ManhattanGray.com is the store on Shopify. You can type in Manhattan Gray Pomade or just Manhattan Gray on Amazon and Walmart.com, Amazon.com, and then Manhattan Gray on social media, so Instagram and Facebook.
Awesome. And we're going to link everything in the show notes, link to the store, social media platforms, all of that. So just remember, if you haven't already, like, comment, and subscribe. We're all on all podcast platforms. Make sure you leave us a comment. Let us know who you want to hear from next. And we'll tap in with y'all. Thanks for joining.
Later.